This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Americans just don't die well. We don't die the way we say we want to, which is at home, surrounded by our friends and our family. The numbers from Medicare are that only about a third of us get to go out that way. Most of us spend our last days in hospitals, tethered to machines and feeding tubes, or in nursing homes. But what about doctors? Because this is what they know, right? Are they more successful when it comes to the end of life than the rest of us? A regular collaboration with the New York Times this go-round is on healthcare. It's going to be in the paper tomorrow. Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein gets us going. He begins near Cleveland, Ohio, at the home of Dr. Elizabeth McKinley.
Deep breath. Okay, good.
Brave. You hear that word a lot when people are sick. But when Elizabeth McKinley's family and friends talk about bravery, it's not as much about the way McKinley, a 53-year-old internist, has battled breast cancer. It's about doing what so few of us can. Stop fighting.
Wow, listen, that sounds good. That's nice and clear, and you know how we heard that.
Last spring, after McKinley's cancer had found its way into her liver, lungs, and the tissue surrounding her brain, her doctor told her she had two options.
You can put chemo directly into your brain or total brain irradiation.
Blood pressure real quick.
I'm looking at these drugs head on, and either one would change me significantly. I don't want that.
What McKinley wanted was time with her husband, a radiologist, their two college-age kids, and another chance to soak her feet in the Atlantic Ocean.
I want to have another summer with my family, maybe, or a little more time being me and not being somebody else.
So after 17 years, McKinley stopped treatment for her cancer and started weekly hospice visits to be as comfortable as possible for the short time that's left. Her mother didn't understand. She asked McKinley's husband, Chip Gillickson, if there wasn't something more to do.
And almost bite my tongue to say, do you have any idea how much disease your daughter has?
McKinley and her husband were looking at her disease as doctors who know the limits of medicine. Her mother was looking at her daughter's cancer like a mother, clinging to the promise of medicine as limitless. When it comes to dying, it's surely every bit as wrenching for doctors as it is for the rest of us. But they have a clear advantage. They've seen death up close. They have access to the best medicine has to offer, and they understand their choices.
You've got a lot of knowledge, a lot of awareness of what's likely to come.
That's Andrew Billings. For 30 years as a palliative care doctor, he helped his patients manage pain, map out their treatment options, and planned end-of-life care. Now,
here we are in the infusion unit.
He's the patient with a rare form of lymphoma.
I am hooked up to an intravenous line, which is hooked up to a pump, which is hooked up to me through a port.
Last month, I spent time with Billings as he sat through the first of several hours of chemotherapy at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute in Boston.
We've got harp music today, it looks like. I'm going to waft up to heaven.
In the 6 months he's been diagnosed, Billings says being a doctor has helped. For example, he and his wife, Susan Block, also a palliative care doctor, knew just what to do after a round of chemo this summer left him ravaged and exhausted. Block says they asked for Ritalin, the drug often used for attention deficit disorder.
Most patients, I don't think, would know to ask about, could we try some Ritalin to use for this fatigue? And yet, I know, and Andy knows because of our fields, that that's a really great drug and that it makes a huge difference in being able to be more part of the living while you're there.
Being as comfortable as you can is a lesson for everyone to learn, says Dr. Diane Meyer from the Center to Advance Palliative Care at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York.
The people who feel better, who are less anxious, whose pain is controlled, they're not using up all their bodily energy just to get through the day. So I think we're pretty convinced that it will help us live longer as well.
As a doctor, Billings has had a level of control few patients ever get. But even Billings, whose cancer is in remission, hit the same wall so many other patients do. He doesn't have a great handle on his prognosis.
I've looked at the survival curves, and I don't know which dot I am, but there's some dots that are very, very soon, and there's some dots that are a long ways off, and I just hope I'm one of those.
If anyone can coax a prognosis out of his doctor, it's Billings, with 30 years treating patients at the end of life. But even he couldn't.
It's hard to ask those questions, hard to get answers.
It turns out doctors don't like to talk about the end. Studies show few offer patients a prognosis, and when they do, they often overestimate the time someone has left. In fact, the better a doctor knows his patient, the rosier the outlook. Billings says it's the doctor's responsibility to help patients get their bearings.
I think they need to give a prognosis, which can be very simple, like, you know you have a very serious illness, and I wonder if you've thought about it getting worse. In other words, you don't need to go right to your dead ducky. Don't buy any green bananas.
When physicians don't lay out the road ahead, University of Washington Professor of Medicine Dr. Anthony Bach says patients can end up where they least want to be, the ICU.
Many of those people have ended up in those places because they haven't realized the implications of saying, yeah, I'll have that one more treatment. Yeah, I'll have that chemotherapy.
Patients and families often pay a high price for these difficult and unscripted deaths, psychologically and economically. The Dartmouth Atlas Project found nearly 20% of Medicare's $550 billion annual budget is spent on the last 6 months of life. Atlas senior researcher David Goodman did the analysis.
The evidence is very clear that if we respect patients' preferences, most patients will choose less aggressive care and care that costs less.
But what sounds simple can be difficult, even for doctors.
I'm Ken Zeitler. I'm now 64, and I'm a medical oncologist.
Zeitler lives in Raleigh, North Carolina. He's the son of a doctor, the father of two doctors, and a cancer specialist. He was diagnosed 18 years ago with a brain tumor. Consistently, Zeitler and his family have mapped out a clear medical path. Then last June, he woke up with the left half of his body paralyzed after a low-risk biopsy caused a hemorrhage. Zeitler hadn't fully explained to his family losing control of his body was one of his deepest fears, and he regretted it.
As a physician, I did have to listen to this inner voice. In this case, you know, I was enraged. I hadn't listened to those. I felt like, you know, I'd screwed myself.
Zeitler realized afterwards saying no can mean more than turning down a procedure. It can mean dealing with something much harder, the emotional pull of family who want you with them no matter what.
Quality life means different things to different people, and you have to decide for yourself, I guess with your family, but ultimately it's a personal decision.
Over the last decade, there are signs that the end-of-life choices we're making are slowly shifting. Medicare figures show fewer people are dying in the hospital, and there's been a modest increase in hospice care. And you've got people like Elizabeth McKinley back in Cleveland, a person who just acknowledges what's in front of her.
People always tell me, you know, you've got other options. I don't feel like I have other options. I think my option is to figure this out and go forward.
Since this spring, friends and caregivers have come and gone. McKinley's hospice bed right in the living room. Her daughter calls it meeting death at the front door. McKinley says she liked that expression.
Yeah, I think allowing death to be at the front door allows us to talk more about life in reality, because I think that's what we're talking about.
McKinley's goal was to find a way to maximize a good life. In her final days, friends and family say she did. Elizabeth McKinley died November 9th at home, where she wanted to be. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.